Hello, Vet Blast podcast listeners. Did you know that you can earn CE credits with this podcast? After listening to the episode, head on over to dvm360.com/flex and then sign in or register for a free account. Then select podcast and follow the online prompts to claim your CE.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Welcome back to the Vet Blast podcast. We're going to be chatting all things dental related and saving more teeth with Regum. We want to thank our friends at PRN for sponsoring this podcast, and joining us is our wonderful colleague, board-certified veterinary dentist and oral surgeon, Dr. Jennifer Mathis. How are you, my friend?
Hello. It's nice to see you, Adam.
Nice to see you, too. Really looking forward to this conversation. I'm curious to know more about Regum Vet and some other things in veterinary dentistry, like what's new, what's happening. So we're going to get caught up on there. So a little information about Dr. Mathis. She's a board-certified veterinary dentist from Des Moines, Iowa. Additionally, with over 20 years of initial experience in general practice, she has also become a certified veterinary pain practitioner and medical acupuncturist through the International Veterinary Academy of Pain Management. Dr. Mathis is passionate about treating the mouth to prevent and treat pain, helping to ensure the well-being of her patients. And this past year, congratulations, she was named WVC's Hands-On Laboratory Speaker of the Year. Woohoo! That's awesome.
That's nice.
And she also provides some fundraise lectures at vetceyouluse.com. So we're going to be chatting a little about periodontal disease. But let me just ask you this. Let's set the record straight here, Doc. I know a pet peeve is not calling them dentals. Then you hear like co-hats. What are we calling these dental procedures these days? What do we do?
Well, as I was alluding to you, my pet peeve is when someone talks about a dental procedure as a dental. Dental is an adjective. That does not give enough credibility. This is anesthesia. This is IV fluids. This is paying close attention to the patient. It is cleaning, but it is not just supergingivally. It is below the gum line as well, subgingivally. It is oral exam and probing. It's dental radiographs, radiography. Sometimes I can't tell if I'm talking to a client or a colleague, and I have to say x-ray and switch it around. And so I get tongue-tied that way. But what happens, this usually refining problems in 3 out of every 4 patients, we're going to talk about that as well later in this podcast. But we will end up doing oral surgery. So it's oral surgery, it's flaps, it's nerve blocks. Sometimes we're talking about grafts. Free gum bed is a type of graft that can be used. And there's a lot of things that really are involved with this. There's anesthetic recovery, all these components. So when we call it a dental, does that do it justice? It sounds simple and easy, and it can be, but it is rarely easy. Why do they think they call it like pulling teeth? There is a lot more to this. And so when we talk to each other and call it a dental, I know what you're talking about. My technicians and my assistants know what we're talking about. But what we're going to end up doing is say dental to our client, and we're going to just bounce it off as if it doesn't matter so much. So if you're talking to a colleague, you can call it a COHAT, which stands for Comprehensive Oral Health Assessment and Treatment. You can call it oral ATP, Oral Assessment and Treatment Plan. I'm sure there's some other terms that people used as well. The easiest thing is just to practice by talking to each other and call a dental procedure or dental cleaning, because the dental cleaning usually leads to dental treatments, oral surgery. There's a lot more to it. But if we just use dental procedure, use dental as an adjective, and I'm fine with it. But if we're telling each other dental, we're going to say it to a client on accident, and that is going to devalue what we do. And then why are we charging so much to do this? Because there is a lot involved, and it sounds really simple. And it is anything but.
Right.
So that's why we need to choose our words carefully when we talk to each other to practice for that.
Yeah, excellent. Now, thank you for sharing that, setting the record straight there. Okay, and you know, everyone starts with the dental charting, of course, radiographs, of course, too. But let's talk a little bit about those pockets. So What's the cutoff when you're looking at the millimeters and you're putting the probe in and you're checking for any pockets? What do we do about those?
Yeah, so first we need to learn the normal sulcus depth, the average normal sulcus depth. The sulcus is basically the gum between the gum and the tooth. And the average sulcus depth or typical sulcus depth in a dog is 1 to 3 millimeters. And in a cat, it's 0.5 millimeters. The cat and the cat, of course, is 0.5, but the dog and humans have the same normal sulcus depth. But when you consider our patients, our canine patients, there is a wide breadth of size, like the 2.2 pound Chihuahua I saw the other day, and then the 180 pound Mastiff. I mean, there's going to be quite a range of pocket depths you're going to find. And then when we talk about canines, especially on something like that Mastiff, you usually have that wide band of fibrous tissue, and you might have a normal probing depth that might actually be 4, 5, or 6 millimeters. So the average typical is 1 to 3. And so really we're considering in relation to the length of the root of the tooth you're talking about. And so a 1 millimeter probing depth on a small breed dog on an incisor is probably okay. But a 3 millimeter is not okay on an incisor. It may be fine on a canine or something else, but we have to consider that in relationship to the tooth. So when we're talking about pocket depths, we should be circumferentially probing. So probing all the way around the tooth, not just four sides, just gently bounce, not really bounce, but go up and down circumferentially all the way around the tooth on every one of those tooth patients. That's 42 potential tooth patients in a dog and 30 potential tooth patients in a cat, unless you have the rare cases of patients that have supernumerary teeth. My record patient has 47 teeth. But it's always fun to see those things. I always point out the unusual or the supernumerary roots where we have an extra root and I call those male teeth, you know. Yes. Some male teeth are more well endowed than others, but
that's so funny.
So it's in probing and looking for pockets. And so once we have a pocket, we have to figure out, what does that mean? So we also have to consider, does that bleed on probing? That is a sign of at least gingivitis, but could it be more? What's underneath that pocket? Is a bed of granulation tissue? Is it worse than we think? How much bone is really there? And is there gingival recession? Because if I have a pocket depth of 1 millimeter, but I also have gingival recession above it from the neck of the tooth where it was, I may have attachment loss if there's 3 millimeters of gingival recession of 4 millimeters, even though the pocket depth is only 1 millimeter. Other situations, I don't have gingival recession, but I might have gingival enlargement because the pocket is actually reactive and causing the gum tissue to get thick and hypertrophied. And you might have some increased pocket depth that way. And you might get a 6 millimeter pocket, but from the normal sulcus depth, it may only be 3 millimeters. But you still don't know the attachment loss on that. Is it 3 millimeters of attachment loss, or is the bone height still pretty high? And so this is the importance of taking dental radiographs. When we talk about studies from the 90s, they still hold true to today, that 72 to 86% of patients have an abnormality on radiographs. So let's just make that simple. That's 3 out of every 4 patients have something hiding. And those same studies show that 42%, that's the same studies in dogs and cats, but I think it's closer to 50. I seem to see it more, have at least one visually normal tooth with a problem radiographically. So if you're not taking radiographs of the entire mouth, half of the time you're missing something. Sometimes it's really mild and not important or incidental, like a male tooth. Other times you'll be finding cysts, dentigerous cysts or radicular cysts or other things. But we need our radiographs to tell us what's going on. We're going to find more problems, and then we'll be able to know how to treat it properly, because our radiographs are going to look at the level of bone around each individual tooth root. And if there's 4 different periodontal disease stages, 3 where we talk about major treatment. I'm sorry, I'm just going on and on. If you had another question, but
this is good. I'm all ears listening, because as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, when I'm doing these dental procedures, you know, there's a lot of factors that come into play when you want to save a tooth versus pulling it. So, you know, which teeth are worth saving now that we're talking about pockets and x-rays and what we're finding?
Yeah, so it matters on which teeth. So I mentioned there's 42 teeth in a dog, or 30 in a cat. Both dogs and cats have the same 8 important teeth. It's just the canines and the carnassials. So that's it. So your maxillary 4th premolars, your mandibular 1st molars, and then all 4 canines. So those teeth are worth saving. All of those, a dog, it's not exactly true, but it's pretty darn close. A pet with those 8 teeth and no others basically has the same structure and function as a pet that had all 42 or 30, depending on which species you're talking about. So whatever we want to do, we want to work to save those. A lot of times we'll find a tooth, say a 2-rooted premolar next to a mandibular 1st molar, especially on the mandible, because those that 3 or 4 or 8 overlaps the molar, the 9. And there's a little bit of overlap there, and that's a common spot for things to get stuck in there and usually get disease around the 8, the 4th premolar first. And so a lot of times we need to take out 8 to preserve 9, but we may have already had some bone loss around 9, and we need that to come back if or when it can. And so we need to determine the amount of bone loss as well as the type, meaning horizontal versus vertical. So the amount, we divide those into 4 groups. 0% is no bone loss. And that is called periodontal disease stage 1. That is gingivitis. We just clean it and that's it. And hopefully that's preventative. That's completely reversible. That's what we're doing all the time. Realistically, there is at least 1% bone loss in many situations. And so technically it's a periodontal disease stage 2. Periodontal disease stage 2 is between 1 and 24 or 25. It's academic on which one it is. So basically up to 25% bone loss. And you would treat these with closed root planing, which means we clean that area out deep into the sulcus. And it's closed root planing because we don't have to make a flap and open it up. That means we're talking about pockets less than 5 millimeters. When you get beyond 5 millimeters, even though you think you're cleaning well, I have tried and tried and tried, and then I go open it up to add a graft or do something, and there's still stuff in there. There's places and times where I'm doing a graft, I've opened it up, I've cleaned it well, and my lesson to myself is what I'm trying to teach. I've always taken pictures, and then I zoom in, I'm like, I missed something. Yeah. So my lesson to learn from my mistakes, everyone, if they're cleaning a pocket, take a photo of it, and then zoom in before you say you've cleaned it fully. That assumes you've opened it up. But clean that area out. We'll talk a little bit more about cleaning in a moment. And closed root planing is just cleaning those pockets up to 5 millimeters. And then by Martel's study in 2019 in JAVMA, those will reattach equally as using a periaceutic. A periaceutic is like Doxirobe, Clindoral. I think Paroviva is a something else now out there. But these are things you can stick in a pocket, and they're supposed to help it return. Well, a thorough pocket cleaning will have equal results as a periaceutic. The problem is a lot of us think we're cleaning deep enough and cleaning well enough, and we're sticking in periaceutics over it, hoping it's going to do something, and it's just not going to do enough. A thorough cleaning will do just as well, so just be thorough with your cleaning. So that's stage 1 and 2. Stage 3 is 25 to 50% bone loss on any given root. And that is where you're going to use Regum Vet. That is where we are going to have things shine, and there's differences in that. And I'll come back to that because that is the meat of the problem. And then the next stage then is periodontal disease stage 4. Periodontal disease stage 4 is 50+% bone loss on any given root. So when you have 4, usually these are always say goodbye. By the time they're 4, periodontal disease stage 4, you pretty much have to extract them. And a lot of times we're talking about smaller teeth that has periodontal disease stage 4, so we can preserve the adjacent structural teeth and preserve those and keep those. And sometimes we'll have bone loss on the adjacent structural teeth. It'll be mild. And there's 2 different types. There's horizontal and vertical. A lot of times it's horizontal. Our pets are more prone to horizontal bone loss. And that's like the bone level. You take the x-rays, just flat, like a horizontal kind of thing. And so your key is if it's less than 50% bone loss and it's horizontal, you don't have any walls to support it. And so bone is never going to come back higher unless you have something to support it. It's possible with Regum Vet in certain situations with proper cleaning for affrications, because the walls of the tooth roots can act like a support, that it's possible to come back with Regum Vet in some cases. And that is the exception to some of the other components that we've had as graft materials. But it's placed in there as long as there's sufficient gingiva to cover that back to the normal sulcus depth. Otherwise, we need to bring the gum back down to the level of bone. Otherwise, when we suture that back and we don't have anything in there and there's nothing to support it, it's just going to, plaque reforms in a matter of milliseconds. That's a normal biofilm on the teeth. But it will turn from a normal flora to an abnormal flora and re-cause disease there in less than 12 weeks, basically a matter of hours. So it's going to have something back in there. And so you've just created a pocket or put it back there, and there's a pocket already there, and it's just going to progress. And so we need something to not allow it to progress. The best ones are the cases of vertical bone loss. Those are the situations in which the bone is lost down, say, the side of the root, not to the apex at all, the apex of the tip of the root. So when you have vertical bone loss, you have a vertical pocket that goes down the root, and we need to clean that out thoroughly. And then we place a graft material in it, but you have to have a membrane. That is the key part, is having a membrane or a barrier. If you don't have a membrane or a barrier, what happens is that the soft tissue downgrowth is going to go in there, and you're not going to get any bone returning to the site. And bone takes at least 12 weeks to form, so we have to be able to keep that out of there. The cool thing about Regum Vet is it is a barrier and a graft material. As I place Regum into a site, I dip it just a subtle amount. It's kind of like a sponge. And it's essentially basically absorbs the body's own blood and fills that sponge and then stays there and then keeps that soft tissue away while the body can reform the parts it's supposed to have, so we can reform bone, and it's kept out of there. And then we come back and reevaluate that. In somewhere between 6 and 12 months, I usually recommend at 9 and 12 months, we see their best responses at 12 months. But if you wait 12 months and you didn't get your beneficial closure, which we'll talk about in a moment as well, then we are not going to get the outcome we desire. We'd want to find that before we got to the 12-month mark.
Okay. And so what exactly is Regum Vet, and what are the steps for placing it in?
Yeah. So Regum is actually manufactured by BioChange, and BioChange.life has a website. And they mention that you soak it, and then you trim it, and then you place it, and you close it. Well, that's true. But if you do that, you are going to have a little bit of a problem, because when you go to close, your flap is not ready. And every time I go to close, if I do it that method, I will dislodge it. Okay. And it's fine. I can replace it, but it's never as good as when I placed it the first time. And then I'm all frustrated. So I would suggest we have a different method to do this. So first step with being able to place Regum into a pocket is make sure you have a clean pocket. If you have garbage in, you're going to get garbage out as a result. If you have it clean to begin with, you'll be good. And remember what I was trying to allude to before, is if we have a 5-millimeter pocket or more, we have to open a flap to be able to clean that thoroughly. If you want to know more about flaps, there is information at vetceyouillyouse.com, and there'll be other things coming out as well. Also, how to clean, we need to use a curette, not a scaler. A scaler is for above the gum line, and ultrasonic scalers don't work well below there. They do make ultrasonic curettes. But a curette is has a rounded toe, and it goes underneath the gum line. So you want to know how to save a tooth. You want to know how to use the instruments and what the difference is. There is a link at my website. There's a video. It's tooth.vet/regumvet. If you go there, there's a 15-minute video that talks about cleaning, and so you can learn how to clean that area. Because we're taught a bunch of things, but we're not taught enough dentistry in school, and we need to really know how to do it properly. So make your flap, clean the area, and then you want to plan your closure. Anytime you make a flap, you should plan how you're going to close it. And so you plan your closure, which means you have to release the periosteal fibers to get it ready to close, and just get ready to close, but don't suture it. Now it's time to use Regum. And instead of soaking it, because it becomes little friable with a sponge, I would dip it just momentarily. And then it's soft enough you could trim it to the size you need. Maybe use the whole thing, maybe use half, maybe use a quarter. Yesterday I used half of a square, a quarter of a square, and half of a cone, and three different sides. And it's firm when you've just dipped it. And when you can, then you have the ability to press against it, and you can press and place that into the site. And I had my technician videoing when I did it, so I could use it as an example. It took me about a minute. So it's pressing and waiting for the body's blood to fill in that area, because I've already cleaned it well, and then pressing some more until, and it's expanding and filling that site and going all the way underneath the gum line. And then as it fills with blood, the margins become somewhat friable, which is good because you're just going to kind of, I use my curette to kind of chop off the little margins at the edge, the tiny little bits you don't need to trim it to place as you're placing it. And then you're done. You're ready to close. And because you already made your flap, it's already released, you don't have to manipulate any tissues. It's already ready to close. It's in there. You just pull the flap over and you close it. And so your keys for any kind of flap, what you're doing, whether or not you're using regum, is to have gingiva, not mucosa, surrounding the tooth. Mucosa is, there's gingiva, the band of more fibrous tissue around a tooth. And then we have the mucogingival line. And then we have the mucosa. Mucosa is what you're going to stretch and go up to 10 times its normal width. But if you don't have gingiva around the tooth, the gingival collar, that tooth will just, you'll just get pockets, periodontal disease, and bone loss, and you'll lose that tooth. If you have, so you have to have gingiva around. So gingiva around, have a tight gingival collar, and make sure when you pull that flap, it has is tension-free. So you've already released the periosteum so that when you picked up your flap and laid it down, you just it just sits there and wants to be in opposition or further, and then you can trim it to place. But if it shrinks back, then it's not tension-free. But if you have those three things, the gingiva, a tight gingival collar, and tension-free, you should be good. So I then return in 9 to 12 months. Take x-rays and see what it looks like.
And what's your go-to suture for those kinds of things?
That is important. Yeah. Very good. Thank you for asking. So when I'm talking about these kinds of things, we're talking about periodontal surgery. And periodontal surgery, we're talking about little friable areas. And so, I mean, when you go to grab it and you try one of them, I have to sometimes use a sling suture or something around it. And you use that reverse cutting needle and it tears. And so my go-to suture for this is actually made by PRN. It's a 5-aught Monomend is theirs. Monocryl is another. Seqirus makes a similar one, but it's we don't need the antibacterial one. You don't want the drag of any Vicryl or any Vicryl or Peed. So you want a monocryl, monomend something thing with a taper needle. And PRNs have a really nice, I don't know if it's coated or special way they sharpen it. It stays sharp longer. Otherwise, Seqirus has a Cobra Black coating on taper needles and they'll stay sharp longer. So if I use Seqirus, I would use a Cobra Black 5-aught taper is what I would use to close them.
Okay.
So taper I tend to use for cats because I know it'll get dull after a time. I'd rather use multiple sutures and not tear because then I'm messed up my flap and I have to start over and that's no fun. So I taper for that and taper for small little perio procedures.
That helps.
I had a larger dog yesterday. I used a 4-aught taper.
Okay. Yeah, because to your point, when you're just ready to place that and then all of a sudden, like either it goes through, you know, like the needle cuts right through your flap and you're like, oh man, it's like you're trying to find another just to get purchase.
I will tell you another tip, but I talk about that in my extraction lectures, is that make sure you release the tissue, lift it with your periosteal elevator palatally or lingually as well. So release all of your areas, not just where you made your flap, release all the way around where you're going to be on both sides. And even if it's just 1 or 2 millimeters, enough that you have a better bite, because when you go and you'll hit bone if you don't release it, and then you'll end up tearing and you didn't intend to.
Yeah.
You can take a full thickness bite.
Fantastic. Dr. Mathis, phenomenal job. This one's so fast. It's going to great notes here. Dr. Mathis, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. And where can we learn more about you and your courses?
So I'm found at www.tooth.vet. So my website, it has information on me. It has information on different types of dental procedures. I have dentistry case chronicles. You can read about stomatitis and some tips there. There's more information on my courses, so that the you'll use kind of thing. Everything is at tooth.vet.
Great. Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. And thank you to our friends at PRN for supporting this great conversation. Hope you learned a lot of great pearls of wisdom in this. This is a lot. I love it. It's fantastic. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to claim your CE credit for listening to this podcast via dvm360.com/flex, where you can register or log in to your free account. Then select Podcast CE and follow the online prompts. We hope you enjoyed the episode. See you next time. And remember, always stay pawsome.